The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
You've got time enough for two of us. What is mine, I will share. We've got things that we can do without, most anytime, anywhere. This is Carefree Highway Revisited, the show that celebrates Gordon Lightfoot's music song by song, a proud member of the FM Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mike Messner, and with me today is a fellow Lightfoot fan from Markham, Ontario, making his fifth appearance on the show, Michael Howitt. Michael, it's great to be talking with you again.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I've always loved doing these, and it's great to talk about our musical mentor, Gordon Lightfoot. So yeah, I love doing this. Thanks so much for having me back.
Yeah, you bet. And this is, as I said, your fifth visit with us. And since you were on the show last, you had a chance to attend an event at Massey Hall, didn't you?
Yeah, so it was in May of this year, and it was called Celebrating Gordon Lightfoot at Massey Hall. So we were lucky enough to get tickets. We were up in the very last row of the balcony of Massey Hall's, but Massey Hall is such a great place. So anywhere in the hall, the sound is great. Maybe we can see most of the stage, but yeah, it was a great night. I guess there was about 16 different artists, all Canadian as far as I know, and some of Gordon's contemporaries, like Mary McLaughlin, was there. Burton Cummings did a song. Sylvia Tyson did a song, as well as younger artists that have been influenced him, including Meredith Moon, his daughter, did a song. They call Massey Hall the House of Gordon because he's played there more than anybody else. So to hear these artists and their take on the song, on Gordon's songs, a lot of artists said it's almost like Gordon is here with us. And each artist kind of gave a story about how Gordon influenced their lives and their career and his songs. And it was kind of interesting to hear the song choices, like Dallas Green did Sundown, and Tom Cochran did Requiem for Gerald, and Meredith Moon and Serena Ryder did If You Read My Mind. But some of the secondary, like the deeper cuts that were cool to see, like my favorite was All I'm After, because it's kind of a deep cut. So to hear Julian Taylor do that, when as soon as he started playing, I thought, I love that song. So I got so excited. And Alison Russell did Black Day in July. She did a great job with that. And
Oh, wow.
There was kind of a surprise guest. Nobody really knew what it was, but the two surviving members of the rock band Rush came out, Alex Lifeson and Geddy Lee, and they did The Way I Feel. So that was cool. And so the Lightfoot band, his band is touring right now. And so they backed up the artists on the first set. The cool thing was that PB Charles on pedal steel rejoined them just for this one concert. He's not touring with them, but to hear PB Charles again in concert, like the pedal steel, especially on the Requiem for Gerald, like it just adds another dimension to those songs. And so that was special to hear. And Blue Rodeo, they're a well-known Canadian band, probably in the U.S. they're not well-known, but they backed up the second set. And then everybody came back on the stage together and did Summer Side of Life all together, like a big chorus. So, Yeah, it was a great night. It was so exciting. You can see it on YouTube now. And apparently, I don't know if you can get CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, has a streaming service. I don't know if you can get that in the States, but you can see the concert on CBC Gems. So if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. It was a great night, and they were talking about making an annual thing. I don't know if that's going to happen, but to hear all these current artists, like younger than me, talking about how Gordon influenced them and covers these songs, it was great. It was a great night.
Well, it makes me wish that I had been there to see it. And of course, it was during the school year, so I couldn't get away easily. That is amazing. I will definitely check that out. And I'll also see if I can get the CBC version of that. So thank you for telling us about that.
Yeah.
Now, you wanted to talk about I'll Tag Along, and we'll talk about where that fits in the canon. But I can tell you, for me, it's a simple, sad song about relationships, but it also leaves enough to my imagination about the status of that relationship. It kind of implies I will tag along. So there is potential for this relationship, whatever it is, to continue, to stay in touch with this person. And I also think of tagging along as being there for someone in a time of great sorrow. And I flash back to Christmas 2001, when I had just lost my job, and I did that 8 months after getting married, and I'd never been laid off before, and I was just destroyed. And I was at my in-laws and thinking to myself, oh my gosh, you know, what kind of an impression am I making on the family? And my brother-in-law came in and said, hey, come on, let's go Christmas shopping. And so we just went around this little town where my in-laws live, and he just took me out of myself a little bit. And so that's the kind of thing that I flashed to when I heard this song and when I thought about it. So why did you want to talk about it? What's the meaning that it has to you?
Well, I just remember whenever a new album came out from Gordon recorded, and I'd go out and buy it as soon as it came out, usually in Toronto. This was back when they had vinyl records. So the tradition here in Toronto is you go downtown Toronto, go to Send the Record Man, or A&A Records was their music world, but Send the Record Man was Gordon's go-to place. So you go to Send the Record Man, buy the album. So get all excited and put the album on. And with a vinyl album, the experience is you got to put it on and listen to each track one after another, you know, let the record player play. So you play them in sequential order. So listen to side one and then flip it over to side two. So this was a different sound. I guess he kind of started a bit on Salute, synthesizers, keyboards, some kind of distorted pop type electric guitars. And
yeah,
so I'm listening to the album and I'm thinking, yeah, it's the production's really good, really polished. The songs are great songs. But I'm kind of thinking in the back of my head, well, this isn't the Gordon Lightfoot I'm used to.
Yeah.
So then I flip it over side B and it starts. And kind of the second last song, A Passing Ship, it's a little bit more like Gordon. But then the very last song on the album is I'll Tag Along. And and as soon as it started, I thought, yeah, this is the Gordon that I grew up with. So it kind of put me in a welcoming place. So that's kind of what drew me to the song. I kind of get with this album that since Summertime Dream, maybe the album sales weren't as strong as it used to be. And in the 80s, it was all about this was a sound in the 80s. So maybe he's trying to stay current. So he's changing his sound. You know,
yeah.
You want to evolve a bit. And so I get why he did it. But to me, I'll Tag Along is vintage Gordon Lightfoot. Just the beautiful melody, the melancholy lyrics, and it gets the emotion going. And that's kind of what drew me to the song in the first place.
You know, there is some speculation that East of Midnight was going to be Gordon's last album and that he was going to retire at that point. Well, of course, we have to wait 7 years for Waiting for You to come out, but it's the last song on what some people expected would be his last album. And if he had finished up with that and we never heard any more Gordon Lightfoot, obviously we would have been cheated out of a lot of great music, but I think that song was a beautiful end to what at that point had already been a remarkable career. So I think that it's set in a perfect place for that because it really is the old Gordon, like you said. Is there a particular setting that you would want to listen to this in, or a particular activity that you would be doing, or is this something that you could listen to absolutely anytime?
I think anytime. It's one of those songs that you want to relax to a bit. It kind of puts you at ease. Like, there's just a vibe to it. If you feel like you're maybe a bit isolated, whatever, like, don't worry, I'm there to support you. Like, I'll tag along. Yeah, it's just kind of a relaxing atmosphere. The way the lyrics are, I don't smoke, so I'm not smoking. I won't see smoke rings rising till they disappear. Don't drink tea, but at the same time, you know, just relaxing, maybe a glass of wine or something like that. Like,
for me, I could listen to this song anywhere at any time doing pretty much anything, which is rare for me. Not that I don't love all of Gordon's music, but I usually associate different songs with different times or different settings or different activities just because they've hit me at different times in my life. Well, let's start focusing on the song a little bit. The Jennings biography only mentions the song twice, and in neither of those does it talk about how the song got written or where he was at when he was writing it or who it was written about. Do you have an angle on the origins of the song?
No, it's one of those songs, like a lot of his songs, there's a lot of information you can get. This one, I couldn't find much of anything, but I know that the Jennings book does point out that this song seemed to be a kind of a go-to song for Gordon if he was doing an appearance at a fest, whatever, and doing a song or two just solo. This seemed to be one of his go-to songs because the Jennings book mentions that after his 2002 hospitalization with the aortic aneurysm, that the first time he played in public since that episode was at the 2004 Mariposa Folk Festival. And mm-hmm. It was a tribute to Gordon Lightfoot, and Mary McLaughlin was headlining it. And he played one song, and this was a song he played all tang along. So it must mean something to Gordon that this is a song he feels comfortable with playing just himself, and he enjoys playing it. So yeah, that's the only thing I got from the Jennings biography about this song.
I remember that reference very well, and was talking about his hospitalization and the fact that he lived to tell the tale was monumental. And it was a solo song. And really, there's just guitar and keyboard. I can't really hear anything else. We'll talk more about the instrumentation a little bit later. You're listening to Carefree Highway Revisited. We'll be right back after a word from a podcast partner or two.
Radio is so much different than it was in the 80s. We had it all. The music, the movies, the DJs, and morning shows. Back to the 80s Radio is a show from the 80s in podcast form. We bring the memories from that awesome decade back. Join Toscano and Chang every Friday as they take you on a ride back in time, sharing their experiences and laughs. Stop on by and discover some of the wacky things this crazy duo comes up with. They talk about it all, the good, the bad, and the ugly of the greatest decade. Don't miss the greatest 80s podcast in the world. Back to the 80s Radio.
In 1942, when the world needed a hero to fight the forces of evil, a woman had the courage to step forward. Her name was Helen Meeker. Her adventures took her across the United States and behind the lines of both the European and Pacific fronts. President Franklin Roosevelt trusted her judgment. Adolf Hitler put a price on her head. And in the face of overwhelming odds, she battled through everything that was thrown at her, dodged death countless times, and challenged the most diabolical figures in history. The star of more than 20 novels, Helen Meeker proved her grit and determination time and time again. And now the Long Highway Players bring the book series to life on the airways. These exciting dramas will place you in the middle of the action, immerse you in riveting drama, plunge you into unimagined intrigue, and confound you with dark mysteries, while giving you the opportunity to live adventures in a time when the fate of the world hung in the balance. Enjoy the exploits of Helen Meeker and follow author Ace Collins's In the President's Service series on That's Not Canon Podcast Network.
The lyrics are, as usual, the heart of this. You've got time enough for two of us. What is mine, I will share. So it's a promise of companionship and being present to someone who's in need of someone to be present. And he has time for this person, and they have time for him. And then he talks about, we've got things that we can do without most anytime, anywhere. He's not saying, okay, will you please tell me your story because I've got 5 minutes and then I need to go somewhere. Yeah. I mean, he's kind of in a position where he either has pushed everything else out, he's just focusing on this person, or he doesn't have any demands on his time anyway. So he wants to accommodate this person. It's a sign of a good friend. And he's rejecting the tyranny of the urgent. The time with this person is the most important thing at this particular moment. And it also could be, you mentioned the fact that by 86, I mean, the sales had declined, and we'll see a little while numerically how that worked. But he probably was in a position in 85, 86, where he didn't have quite as many demands on his time.
Yeah. And I think they mentioned this in the Jennings book where he spent, I think, the better part of 2 years recording this album, that he's very proud of this album. He put a lot of work into this album. He didn't tour at all, I think, for a full year. And that was the first time in his career, I think, he's went the whole calendar year without touring. So he's got some time to sit back and, I guess, reflect. So,
yeah. And he was probably choosing not to do that because I'm sure that there were lots of venues that would have gladly had him back and he could have sold them out. Every little daydream that appears in All We Do gives us some problems of our own. And this is a delightful line because it's positive and the negative of daydreams. And daydreams are sometimes idle, but they also imply something that we intentionally think about, as opposed to nighttime dreams where we're not conscious and the sort of creative mind sort of percolates through. But daydreams, if you're conscious, you just, your mind is going to go someplace. And relationships are always difficult. And when those daydreams don't come true, it can leave us hurt and disappointed because we are so preoccupied with them.
You know, we dream about doing stuff and, you know, a lot of the times it don't come true. So we can get frustrated if not achieved. So we have to support each other and get us through those times.
If you turn back to that page again and you can't win, if you ask me, I'll tag along. And I thought of the Stephen Stills song, Turn Back the Pages. I thought of Bob Seger's Turn the Page. This idea of revisiting difficult moments in life, like in this case. And we don't know what the difficult moment is. We don't know the circumstances. We don't know who he's really talking to. But we do know that he is prepared to listen for as long as this person wants to talk and offer whatever support he can to the person he's listening to. And it makes me think that Lightfoot was an incredibly good friend to the people that were close to him, not just the musicians that he was close to, because we know that he was incredibly generous with them, but people that he was close with, he would give them the shirt off his back, and he would certainly not be stingy with his time when it came to those people.
Yeah, you mentioned Stephen Stills and Bob Seger, and I always think of Carefree Highway, where it's the lyric from that, turning back the pages to the times I love best. So, so yeah, as soon as I hear that, I kind of think, yeah, Carefree Highway, turning back the pages to the times I love best. And the author saying, I'll do whatever I can to support you type thing. And yeah, as you said, everything I've heard about Gordon, like if you're his friend, you're his friend for life. He'll support you. And you hear his band talking about that, how generous he was with the band. And there's a book called Once Upon a Red Eye by Richard Harrison.
Yes.
And he mentions a lot about that, how the band was loyal to him and how generous Gordon was with the touring band.
Yeah, I had Richard on a couple of seasons ago, and we had two episodes on that, and we could have gone on for four more episodes. I mean, because he just had so many great stories. Paper matches in the afternoon, cups of tea, and all of that zen. Okay, well, all of those seem to be simple pleasures. Yeah, cups of tea, I'm a coffee drinker, but I've also had some tea that was very, very good and was very, very relaxing. I'm not into zen, but I have meditated a few times. Paper matches, I don't really know what paper matches in the afternoon have to do with anything, except maybe you're lighting candles or lighting a cigarette. Or maybe lighting something stronger. He's talking about here.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. Like it's almost contributes to the vibe of the song. And I can't remember the 80s all that well, but I think Zen was kind of an in thing back then, wasn't it? Like a chill out and things like that. So, but the song is very 80s. And, you know, I just picture, you know, sitting in a cafe, an outdoor cafe somewhere, you know, smoking and drinking tea. And I don't know, paper matches, maybe when you talk about simple pleasures, like paper matches, they're very simple. Like they're not the hard stick matches and they're not the fancy lighters. So it's just something simple. All the lyrics, like the great thing I found about Gordon's lyrics is that they're written in such a way that they can mean different things to different people and you can apply them to your life. So to me, it just contributes to the vibe of the song. I love the lyrics in this song. It, Gordon does such a great job with those.
Yeah. Personally, I don't smoke, but if I'm ever lighting candles or something like that, I would prefer to light a wooden match just because I've gotten burned by paper matches too many times. But that's beside the point. I think it's time we took a walk outside. It seems there is no oxygen. And it seems like this person has been sitting in this room and crying and feeling very emotional. And a change of scenery and some fresh air is probably going to do them good. There is no oxygen. This room is too close. Maybe it's closing in on us. Or we've been here too long and we're both getting restless, even if we don't recognize that we're getting restless. So let's get up and get out of here, which is another sensitive thing that he's doing.
Think of lyrics like glove and love rhyming, being used to rhyme together. And it's kind of like, well, this is the only song out there where you've got Zen and oxygen rhyming with each other. So good on Gordon.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard those two words rhyming in any other context. So yeah, good on him for doing that. That is a Dylan-esque lyric, if I have ever heard one. This time tomorrow, we might all be packed and gone. I believe it's best we carry on. And if there's a gentler and prettier way of describing death, I don't know what it is. Life is short. You have to live in the moment as best you can, rather than wallowing in whatever painful stuff is going on. Which is not to say that there isn't a time to mourn and a time to cry. I mean, there is a time for those things, but it can't be something that dictates your entire life. And so he's saying, this is not the end of the world, whatever it is. Smoke rings rising till they disappear in the sky above. If you ask me, I'll tag along. Smoke rings are probably the most transient things in creation. And whether or not he's talking about literal smoke rings from somebody having a cigarette or a joint or whatever, the idea is smoke is going to go rise, to quote song from Winter's Night, in the shadows overhead, and then it's gone. It's almost a biblical reference. Our lives are just smoke rings, and then they're gone.
Yeah, they're very fragile, like me, gone in an instant. Yeah, you're so right. It's funny when you... when you mentioned about this album, A, being his last, and this being the last song on the album, that this could be kind of the last recording. And then when you read that lyric, this time tomorrow, we might all be packed and gone. I believe it's best we carry on. Like when you mentioned about the fact that this could have been the last song, like it just kind of ties everything together. Like if this is the end, then it best we carry on type things. So
thank God it wasn't the end.
Yeah.
But he'd certainly had his share by the time this came out. But then in 93, he came back and we were back at it again for another 20 years.
Yeah.
And thank God, or 30 years.
You're listening to Carefree Highway Revisited. We'll be right back after a word from a podcast partner or two.
Hi, this is Audie Martello, the host of the Mostly Folk podcast, a 60-minute foray into the music we all love. You will hear newly released albums, classic folk, country, and bluegrass music, as well as some traditional music that may or may not be true to the genre. Sometimes irreverent, often opinionated, but always entertaining. You may even hear a radio magic trick every so often, as well as numerous interviews via Zoom and telephone with established as well as indie artists. Mostly Folk is available wherever you listen to podcasts and always at mostlyfolk.org.
Sanjay, look!
Yes, Zach? Wait, what's that thing you're holding up?
It's a time travel device. We can use it to go back to the past and watch movies.
But we already do that on our podcast, Oldie But a Goodie.
No, on previous episodes we were pretending to time travel. Now we can do it for real.
Cool, so we can really go back to like the 80s or the 90s?
No, Sanjay, you're thinking too little. I mean, we could go really far back. Like we travel back over 100 years into the past.
Oh, but Zach, that's so far in the past. Those movies would be old.
Yeah, but, well, the show is called Oldie But a Goodie, so we should probably do old movies.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's right, folks. This year on Oldie But a Goodie, we're going back further than ever before.
Wait, who are you talking to?
We're starting in 1920s, doing one movie from that year, and then moving up to 1921, and we're continuing that until the year 1969.
Nice.
Join our time-traveling journey through cinema by subscribing now to Oldie But A Goodie out wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Not Gunner Productions podcast.
Each and every bad dream will be hammered into dust when we get back where we belong. And when we've come through this rough patch, whatever it is, when we get back, again, he's going to be there for this person. We're going to go through this together. Even though this isn't Gordon's problem, he's going to be there to experience all of this. Whatever fears and worries we have will disappear when we're together as friends or lovers or whatever. When I first heard this song, which was at the tail end of the documentary, If You Can Read My Mind, I thought it might have been a breakup song, but this doesn't say that to me. It's certainly not about a breakup that he has had. I think this is just about him comforting an old friend, and it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with romance or love or the end of an affair of the heart. Am I on the right track with that?
Yeah, definitely. I think you're definitely on the right track. Yeah, I don't think it's a breakup song at all. And because we don't really know the backstory with this, we don't know if it's written about something specifically or what, but it kind of reminds me of his song, I'm Not Supposed to Care, off the Summertime Dream album, where he says, I wish you good spaces in the faraway places you go. If it rains or it snows, may you be safe and warm and never grow old. And if you need someone who loves you, you know I will always be there. I'll do it, although I'm not supposed to care. And I don't think this song is quite like I'm Not Supposed to Care is, I think it's definitely about a relationship that's broken up, but you still care about the person. And as you said, I'm not sure if that's the case with this, if it's just the two characters in a song are just supportive friends, or maybe they were in a relationship in the past and they've evolved out of that. I don't know if romantic is the right word, but it's, you know, there's definitely fondness for the other person and a bit winsome as well. Definitely not a breakup song. I think it's very much, I'll always be there to support you, and no matter what you decide to do, I'll tag along.
Yeah, this is a friendship song. This is not a breakup song.
Yeah.
Well, the song originally was on East of Midnight, which was his 16th original album. It was recorded in sort of fits and starts. There were three different months of 1985 that it was recorded, and then he came back in March 1986 and finished it, and it was released in July of 1986. It was produced by Lightfoot and David Foster, and Foster was the one who was brought in to say, okay, well, let's turn this into a step away from Salute, but still very much trying to be a contemporary album, not rock and roll, but certainly not folk anymore. So Foster was responsible for that. As we said, it was the last song on side B, the 10th song on the record overall. It was not released as a single. And then the album did not do particularly well. It went to 37 in Canada and 137 in the US, which is a nothing sort of charting, at least this side of the border.
Right.
And it is a sign that he maybe had lost his way creatively after Salute, or it was certainly a sign that his sales were falling off. And so in that sense, I can understand why the rumors were that, okay, he's signing off now and he's done with his musical career after 86. I mentioned this a little earlier. The keyboards on this are done very, very tastefully. They're very gentle. They're in the background. They don't overwhelm either the acoustic guitar or the vocal. I don't hear a bass and I don't hear any other instruments here. So I think it's just the keyboards and the acoustic guitar. But the keyboards are the thing that really hits it for me, even though you could just do this with an acoustic guitar and you'd be just fine. What's your favorite musical aspect of the song?
I've got the actual vinyl. So Jennings touches on it a bit in his book as well. So David Foster produced the Anything for Love single, but actually all the other songs were produced just by Lightfoot. So Jennings mentioned in his book that always kind of perturbed Lightfoot. It mentions a quote from Lightfoot saying, that was the only track that David produced, but everyone thought that the album sounded so damn good that he must have produced the whole thing. Apparently, Gordon's mother and Gordon said he was going to be working with David Foster, she warned him, "Don't let David Foster steal your thunder." That's the quote from the book. So I think Gordon kind of had the feeling that maybe he did kind of steal a bit of a thunder. And in the album liners, it mentions who does play on this song. So it mentions that it was arranged by Lightfoot. He plays acoustic guitar and Tom Sesniak plays bass. I guess there is a subtle bass you can hear in it. He plays a Yamaha DX7 keyboard. You know, it's a nice aspect for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And Lenny Castro plays percussion. And I was thinking, where is the percussion? But when you listen to it, there is a triangle that you hear every once in a while that's really tastefully done. That's the percussion. So those were the people that played on the song. But you mentioned that If You Read My Mind documentary, and I always liked this song, but then when I was watching the documentary and when the closing credits are rolling and there's Lightfoot on an empty stage, apparently it's Massey Hall.
Yeah.
And apparently it was filmed in conjunction with the 1992 CBC special called Country Gold, I believe. So they kind of filmed it for that. And they put it at the end of the documentary. When credits were rolling and then this song comes on, and I thought it was so beautiful, just Gordon, just him and his guitar. And he says in the documentary he was 52 years old at the time, so he's still in good voice. So to hear him in good voice singing this song, I fell in love with the song even more. As far as the instrumentation goes, I really love the tastefulness on the record, but it's such a good song, just him on his own too.
I have to admit, I didn't hear the triangle at all. I think it's kind of buried down in the mix. And the bass might have been done by a keyboard because I don't hear a strung bass. And Rick Haynes did not play on this record. So it's entirely possible that it was done through keyboard, because I've heard that done through different bands. And it was a very big thing in the 80s to try to synthesize even the bass.
Yeah, the luxury of having the original vinyl is that you got the album insert, so it, for each track it lists the musicians that played on each track, so it's specifically okay. I can hear the triangle. I didn't hear it at first, but when I seen percussion, I thought, well, where is it? So I listened to it with headphones, and you can hear a triangle every once in a while in the background.
Lightfoot played this song 28 times in concert that we know of, and he may have done others just as a part of a two-song set, Mariposa and other places. We do know that he first played it at Massey Hall in October of 1985. So this is while he's in the midst of recording or creating the record. And then he plays it 28 times. And the most recent time was in May of 2012 at the State Theater in New Brunswick, New Jersey. I think his solo sets, because of course he did have the band, but his solo sets, I think he was just trying to throw in as many things as he could that stood alone. When I saw him, his solo set was, I don't remember what the second song was, but the first one was Sit Down, Young Stranger, because he could get away with doing that just by itself. He didn't need another guitar. I can't find any official covers of the song, and unfortunately, the Lightfoot.ca website has gone down. So I didn't find any, and I didn't find any on GordonLightfoot.com. Do you know of any official covers of the song?
No, it's just kind of amateurs like me that posted covers of the song, but I couldn't find any official covers. But as far as somebody I wouldn't mind here is covering that song, the only one that came to mind, because it's such a, the melody is so lilting. Somebody like Alison Krauss did such a great job with Shadows with Tony Rice, so I thought maybe she would be a good candidate to cover the song. I think her vocal would be really tasteful on this song, but that's really the only I could think of.
Yeah, the only one that I could think of was Ed Sheeran, because he is, I think, a folky at heart, and he certainly is accomplished on acoustic guitar. So I could hear him do this. Hadn't thought about Tony Rice, and I hadn't thought about a woman singing it. But maybe Meredith has done it at one point, and I think I would like to hear her take on it also.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, as we're sort of wrapping up, because it's very late at night where you are as we're recording this, and it's the end of a work week, do you have any other closing thoughts on this?
Well, I was just curious. So you mentioned that you'd seen Gordon play, and he'd done a couple of songs, just him.
That's right.
That's something I've never heard him do live. And I was actually thinking this song, like, that would be a perfect song for him to come out. Like, maybe he does one set, they have an intermission, and the second set come out, and just him and his guitar, and he does this song. And then when he's done, then the band comes out. So, yeah, it's funny you say that, because I thought that would be a perfect place for this song. The only thing I think of is there's a lot of hardcore Lightfoot fans. This is one of their favorite songs, and I think it's a song which speaks to people who may be questioning their sense of belonging or purpose in life. Like, is there anyone that supports me? And I think it talks of companionship and support, and captures the essence as a loyal friend who's always there to lend a helping hand, so, and be by our side during difficult times. So I think it's a great song that way.
I think it is Lean on Me, but yeah, much more beautiful, less of an R&B feel and a lot more of a heartfelt folk song about friendship. Well, Michael, as always, it's a lot of fun to talk to you about our mentor, as you say. Looking forward to having you on the show again soon. Thanks for spending the time tonight.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks so much.
And thanks for listening, everybody. If you like this well enough to listen to the whole thing, tell somebody about it. Carefree Highway Revisited is on Apple, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you get your listening matter. I'd like to make a special request for you to visit my Patreon page. I love this show so much, and I want to keep it going, and you're in a position to help. Please head over to www.patreon.com/carefreehighwayrevisited. A dollar or two a month is all I ask. You can reach me, Mike Messner, at teachermike72@gmail.com.
Well, the next time we're together, I will have my guest Wade Peterson with me, and he and I will be discussing Welcome to Try from the Waiting for You album. That was the album that came out 7 years after East of Midnight, and that episode will be coming out in early November 2024. Until then, for Michael Howitt, this is Mike Messner reminding you, run for the roses, but don't forget to stop and smell them. We'll see you next time.